Welcome to episode 243 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
There will be links with more information on the show page today, which you can find by visiting thelabofbrad.com. And it's important that you,
Dot com. Oh, now it happened.
I don't remember what I was saying.
It's so important, though. I remember it starting with important.
The links are important, right?
Okay.
I had a little trouble pulling this episode together.
Oh.
Because I wanted to be coding.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was still working on the Dorg, mm-hmm. which latest batch of digital organisms, trying to coax them into acting intelligent one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Problem being, of course, that
they're not.
Well, that sums it up, actually. I'm going to say something else. But... Oh. And, you know, genetic algorithms is kind of what we're talking about today.
Okay.
But I covered that in episode 91, long time ago.
Ah.
I'm actually going to smush together several of the past episodes.
So we only have to talk for a minute.
What I'm doing is cheating. I'm using a genetic algorithm to sort of tune the Dorg.
Oh.
I'm designing them an eye at the moment, right?
Right, right.
Got further than I was on Monday, but, you know.
It's only 2 days. I mean.
But basically, I got the equivalent of a retinal cell sort of done. I still have to do some testing and fill in the corners and have a little cry.
It's part of the process.
But the eye isn't evolving. I'm hard coding this.
Oh.
You and I were talking about it, like evolving intelligence and
let them figure it out.
At one point you asked, I was like, well, isn't that cheating? And I said, yes.
We know how it wants to be.
Yeah, we absolutely are going to fast forward as often and as well as we can.
Hmm.
And when you get into some of these digital organisms and these simulations, they have to solve a lot of problems at once, right? Find a mate, get some food, try not to get eaten.
Mm-hmm.
With a genetic algorithm, you can focus them on one problem.
Neat.
And sort of give them a boost or a leg up, as it were. Be more fun once we get to the part where they're solving a lot of problems at once. But they can't really do that until they have senses. And I'm still working on that. I didn't start working that until Monday.
Ah.
All right, so it's Monday again. And I was going to ask you, Phil, any news?
No, I give up on news. There's nothing interesting ever happens in the world, ever.
We're sort of moving away from what was a sort of report on tropical or big storms and earthquakes.
Yes, it's just depressing.
We talked about it. I think it was actually the last episode. Mm-hmm. And we were sort of laughing. I just want to make it clear that the thing we were laughing at is how all of the tragedy is hidden by this yellow dot.
Yes, that's funny. The tragedy, not so
much. No, not so much. In fact, that's kind of why we moved away from it. Because if you're given a report on earthquakes,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be rooting for a big earthquake.
Yeah, you can't help it. You want to see
the big
one. The
12-year-old boy in all of us wants to just see everything fall down.
Yeah.
But, you know, bad things are happening on the other side of that.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll move away from Phil having any responsibility of any sort whatsoever.
That was going to be the other thing. It's a lot of work. I mean, you insert news article, but then you got to know more about
it. I did hear something about somebody, the first human in suspended animation and ever. Did you ever read anything about that?
I wanted to know if his name was Phil.
Better off dead?
Yeah.
I like him the temperature he is.
Yeah, I never actually did read any more into that. Another reason to move away from news, follow through. And
right.
The lack of, on the you part know, of
I
your
actually,
brother.
I didn't read it in case you were going to read it. And
here we
also,
are.
And here we are, not knowing anything about it. I don't get it because putting people in, like, brain-dead/heart-not-pumping, all of that, that's been around for a while.
Okay.
This thing they call cryosurgery.
That's right.
And they drop your temperature down really far, and you are brain-dead, and your heart is not beating, and they have a certain amount of time to do whatever they need to do.
It's a time thing, isn't it? They slow you way down so that they get more time.
Yeah, but they can't cross the what would you call it? The frost line?
That's about it. That's right.
Yeah. They don't want actual ice to form in your system because it'll tear ice, water ice anyway, expands a little when it freezes.
Oof.
And that's enough to tear up your cells something fierce.
Isn't there a frog with antifreeze in its blood?
Oh, there, yes. I saw a thing on an Arctic squirrel that didn't quite use antifreeze. It really, really purified. It made sure there was no way for ice to nucleate.
It's like that super cooled water stuff.
Yeah, know? like you pull out the beer and you tap the top of it and it instantly freezes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've never gotten that trick to work, but Mr. Wizard did. He didn't use beer, but...
Kid show.
Yeah. Anyway, this has nothing to do with today's episode. Today's episode.
I have
genetic
no idea.
Genetic algorithms.
Okay.
Actually, in a larger sense, I want to talk about how I can tune the Dorg.
Uh-huh.
Speaking of which, they can't see yet.
Oh, I was, yeah. Speaking of which, hey, how's that going? Okay.
I mean, usually we have a break and I get bored somewhere in there and a whole lot of programming happens.
Yeah.
But this time, distracted by family and food.
Yeah, it was good though.
Yeah, I got it with the family or the food?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. My family makes good food. What was I going to say? I only got to coding this morning. And all I know so far is that I think the approach I want to use will work.
Oh, good.
It's really weird, though. Like, when you're simulating some sort of physics, it's way different than actual physics.
Okay, yeah.
Actual physics just happens.
Never mind. I was going to say something about we're living in God's programming world.
Do not. My ego has enough trouble. As it is. Let there be light.
Oh, terrible things are happening right now.
I'm the Homer Simpson of deities.
Hold my beer.
Well, anyway.
Okay, exactly, though. Genetic algorithms, they do things.
They do things.
In a sequence.
Oh, actually, you gave me an idea.
I did?
Yeah, I was wondering about... cells, like actual biological cells, can have different forms, different stages of life.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, like multicellular critters do this too. Like you got the larvae, and then the pupae.
Oh, yeah.
And then the adult form, like insects especially. Well, whatever. I was trying to figure out how to make this happen with the Dorg, right?
Okay.
Hey, how about more than one strand of DNA?
We can do that. Wait, but...
I can do that. Yeah, you bet. And then, like, you know, this one during this stage of life, this one during this stage of life.
Oh, it's kind of like genes.
Yeah.
Gene expression.
And then, you know, if I really want to tune one particular stage of life without affecting the other one, I can. Just set all the algorithms to work on that strand and ignore the others.
Okay.
Okay, we're done now. Let's stop talking. So people have thought of evolving intelligence and getting programs to evolve since before there were actually computers to do any of this on. Same people who are writing papers about here's how you build a computer. We're also speculating about, hey, maybe computers or the right kind of software could be intelligent. And maybe we could use evolution to find the right kind of software to be intelligent.
So this is an old
idea. Yeah, this has been around for a while. In 1953,
whoa,
this Italian guy named Baricelli was working on a machine called the Maniac.
Ooh.
And this is one of the earliest computers.
Well, that's not a good name. Sci-fi teaches me. Anyways, but okay.
And this guy was sitting there with like a stack of punch cards in one hand and a deck of playing cards in the other. He was using the playing cards to give them random numbers.
Okay.
Yeah, not exactly a quick process. This machine, like its RAM, used a CRT. Right, like a TV tube.
Oh, the vacuum tube things. Wait, yeah. Cathode ray tube.
It was a full-on TV tube, right?
Yeah.
And it would shine dots on the screen. That's how it entered it. And then the charge would stay for a while on the screen, and that they would read that later. Every morning they had to go in and focus the RAM. And I've seen a TED Talk about it, and the guy was reading some of the notes of the experimenters who were working on this, and you get things like, damn it, I can be as stubborn as this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mouse crawled into ventilation system, turned on vibrator. Result, no mouse.
Wow.
But they were primarily using it to try and predict weather. Hmm. At night, it was being used by the Los Alamos team for nuclear bomb calculations.
Oh, okay.
And then in the little spaces between all that, there was this Italian guy going, they're alive.
I bring you life. Wow.
And then there was John von Neumann, who did it with graph paper. Mm-hmm. Graph paper and a pencil.
Oh, that's rough.
He started work in 1948. He didn't really develop his system until the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody could prove that it worked until after his death.
Woo.
He died in 1966. And it wasn't until a little while after that that computers got fast enough to actually test what he'd come up with. And yes, it works.
Well, good. Now we know. Poor guy. I'm sure he was confident, though.
Oh, well, this is von Neumann. He was like a mathematical genius. Mm. You can tell because a lot of his work no one else can follow.
Does that make him a genius?
Or just a smart ass.
I'm going to write this paper. Nobody's going to know.
In 1963, they started doing it with hardware.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Good idea. Yeah, I'm a fan of this approach.
Doing a lot of aeronautics or help me out here. Aerospace.
I work there. Okay.
Because sometimes you make a change to a surface or a nozzle and the result is not obvious.
Okay.
So in 1963 in Berlin, of all places, a couple of students were like, well, what if we started making random changes, imitating mutations in nature?
Yeah.
And from the article I'm reading, I guess the rest of the staff weren't necessarily on board with this quote-unquote random approach.
They did it anyway.
Yeah, they did it anyway. And it worked. It worked. So hooray for them. And that's still a method they use from time to time. I mean, it's even slower than doing it on computers because they're actually dealing with actual hardware.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, like one of the students broke off and made an automatic experimenter. I'm like, how'd you do that?
Oh, is that one of those dangling hidden bits in the mucky muck?
Yeah,
Can't ever figure out.
That's the most interesting bit, and you give me that sentence.
You told me once, just offhand mentions in the Bible, the giants were there.
Hell yeah, in those days there were giants.
And then we move on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, somewhere in the 1960s, apparently started by a guy named John Holland.
Okay.
We get the actual genetic algorithm.
Okay.
Now, what is a genetic algorithm?
Is a genetic algorithm?
Originally made for problems that had a whole lot of parameters.
Okay.
Right? You got to come up with dozens or even hundreds of numbers to make this other thing work.
Okay.
So what they would do was encode those numbers into some sort of bit representation.
Ah.
And then you start out with a random population.
Mm-hmm.
Of this sort of pseudo-DNA.
Oh, okay.
And then you test them all. Say, this one with these parameters, how well did it work? This one with these parameters, how well did it work? This is usually the most time-consuming part of the process.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you take the ones that have done the best versus the ones that have done the worst. You have what they call a fitness score.
Aha.
Right. So you go and you test them. They each get their fitness score. How good are they at solving the particular problem?
Mm-hmm.
Then, depending upon their score, they are changed up. There are mutations where they might randomly change one of the numbers or randomly flip one of the bits. There's a recombination or crossover where they take bits of the DNA from one and combine it with bits of the DNA from another to make a baby.
Ooh, dirty.
And this is all I've been using on the Dorg so far is something like this.
I've heard you mention fitness scores, yeah.
Yeah. Later on, this approach didn't really get popular until the 1990s, which is about when computers got fast enough to make it worth the trouble. And there, a fellow named John Koza, who popularized a method called genetic programming.
Okay.
Now, the difference between genetic algorithm and genetic programming actually uses computer code-ish.
We finally had computer code of some sort, yeah.
And basically, you get logic trees. Like, here's an operator, like a plus sign. Mm-hmm. You write that on the top, and then on the left, you got the one number that's going to add, and on the right, you got the other one.
Okay.
And that can either be a simple number right there, or it can be another branching part of the tree.
Oh, goodness. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and then when you do mutation, you've got to find somewhere on that tree, say, I'm changing this. And crossover also has to keep track of how the tree is shaped and where appropriate places to put things are.
Well, that seems like a lot of work.
Yes, I played with it, and yes. The big advantage to this one is that you can define these little nodes to be anything a computer can do.
Oh, okay.
So it's very flexible as far as what kind of problems you can apply it to.
No kidding.
The Dorg are sort of halfway between genetic algorithm and genetic programming. Oof. And like I was saying, those two different terms used to mean the one thing and the other, but they're kind of blending together now. It's actually closest to something called linear genetic programming.
Okay.
And what I did is I got a language entirely made up of numbers. Mm. And they're all addresses.
Ah.
Yeah, and it's moving information around, blah, 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 blah. Any negative address calls a port.
Right.
And the ports are like the nodes in genetic programming. Ah. I can define them to do whatever I want them to do.
You hit this one port and it rings for pizza. Yeah.
Oh, the pizza port. That's the best idea you've ever had. I'm so hungry. The thing about these algorithms, the genetic algorithms, is that they aren't intelligent, but they produce answers that seem intelligent.
Okay.
Right? Like, if a human came up with the same answer, we'd go, oh, that's quite clever. But it's just right on the edge. If there was some magic way to get a computer to do its own genetic algorithm, like the whole thing.
Yeah.
We'd be done. It'd already be smart.
I need you to do the following. Yeah. Figure it out.
One thing they have been doing with various forms of genetic algorithm and genetic programming have been used to develop artificial neural networks.
Okay, yes.
This is the direction we're headed in. Now, this is where you ask me, hey, what is an artificial neural network?
What is an artificial neural network?
Well, you know what? Let's talk about that next time. See you then.
Bye.